Production support for Earth Eats comes from Charles Schwab & Company, Incorporated, moving its local branch to 1155 College Mall Road in August. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeigner, CFP, and team offer personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. And need more coffee roasters? A woman-owned coffee bar and roastery dedicated to roasting organic, direct trade, and fair trade coffee from small-scale farmers around the world. Offering signature drinks, teas, and little eats. Located on Pete Ellis Drive. NeedMoreRoasters.com. Welcome to Earth Eats. I'm Kate Young, your host.
Eggplant they're near and dear to my heart, and they're a misunderstood vegetable, I feel.
It's peak summer here in the Midwest, and that means all the summer vegetables are coming on. I'm especially thinking of those in the nightshade family, like tomatoes, peppers, hot chilies, and eggplant. This week on Earth Eats, we'll be exploring this beautiful and sometimes baffling superstar of the summer garden, including growing tips and mouth-watering recipes. If you think you don't like eggplant, stay with us. You might decide to give those shiny purple globes a second chance. Let's start with the news. Alex Chambers is back in the Earth Eats studio. Hey, Alex.
Hey, Kate. I'm going to tell you this week about a new bill in Congress that's trying to address the problem of land transfers in African-American farm families. And then we've got a story about the effects of trade war on American farmers. An estimated 60% of land owned by African-Americans is passed down from ancestors who did not leave a living will. That creates so-called heirs' property, where each descendant inherits a fraction of interest in the land, but without a clear title. And without a title, farmers working that land can't qualify for federal farm programs. Alabama Senator Doug Jones and South Carolina Senator Tim Scott, along with Ohio Representative Marsha Fudge in the House, have introduced the Fair Access for Farmers and Ranchers Act to bridge this divide. The bill would start a loan program for heirs' property owners and would allow farmers and ranchers to qualify for USDA programs. It would also require the USDA to collect data on land ownership and tenure by race, gender, and region. About 120 advocacy organizations are supporting the bill. The Rural Coalition, an advocacy group made up of 50 organizations, has been pushing for years to reform laws that block farmers on heirs' property. The group's executive director, Lorette Picciano, said the bill would make it easier for farm families to navigate the complex laws that are currently keeping thousands of acres of land out of production. Other advocates said the move would help ease family conflicts that arise from collective ownership. Rural Coalition chairperson John Zippert said that current statutes make sharing resources with heirs complicated. With this bill, farm families would no longer need to have every heir's agreement in order to access USDA resources. The U.S. Department of Agriculture plans to lessen the effects of tariffs placed on American agricultural goods by China, Mexico, and Canada. Harvest Public Media's Esther Honig explains more about the short-term fix announced Tuesday.
Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue has a three-pronged plan to help farmers who grow crops like soybeans, raise hogs, or produce a lot of other goods that are subject to billions of dollars in tariffs. He'll use up to $12 billion in federal money for the programs. One part of the plan will provide direct payments to farmers who have seen their international markets dry up as a result of the retaliatory tariffs. In another program, the U.S. government will purchase surpluses of things like nuts, meats, and dairy. And the third program will look to find new export markets. Some Republican and Democratic lawmakers criticized the move, saying a long-term fix to the trade war is needed. Esther Honig, Harvest Public Media.
And that's all the news we have today. Thanks to Chad Bouchard and Harvest Public Media for those reports.
Thank you, Alex, and glad to have you back.
Thanks, Kate. It's good to be back.
In my garden, and in gardens around town, eggplants are starting to ripen on the vine. You should be seeing them at the farmers markets if you live in the Midwest. Earlier in the season, I spoke with Candace Minster out at the White Violet Center for Ecojustice in Terre Haute, Indiana. We were walking through their greenhouse, checking out all the vegetable starts, and I spotted her baby eggplant seedlings.
Oh, I remember coming out here a couple years ago and you had the most beautiful eggplant I'd ever seen.
Thank you.
Eggplant are, you know, they're near and dear to my heart, and they're a misunderstood vegetable, I feel. Unfortunately, I think most people have encountered one too many just soggy, oily, horrible eggplant Parmesan dishes, and so they therefore are not interested. But if you know how to treat the eggplant with respect, you know how to cook it, it doesn't take too much, just a couple extra steps, it can be just so delicious.
You don't have to convince me. I'm a huge fan of eggplant. But I have not had success growing them. What is your secret? What do you think makes an eggplant happy?
So they like to have consistent water. Most of our vegetable crops are on drip irrigation, and I make sure that they get a nice thorough soaking at least once a week. They usually will get a two waterings. And the heat is really helpful for them as well. I will grow them on plastic. If a lot of the organic mulches, I mean, I love the organic mulches and we use them all throughout the field, but they will keep the soil temperature cooler. For the crops like the eggplant that really like the heat, they perform a little better with the warmth that the plastic can provide to them. And they need to have room, so they can grow fairly close to each other, but you just have to be sure that they're not getting a lot of weed pressure, because they don't handle the weed pressure real well. So if they don't get a good amount of light and air moving through, then they can become stunted. The other thing I do is I prune off the first fruit that form, because they tend to not be as big or as healthy as if the plant gets a little more time to get established, okay, has a little more resources before they put up.
Are they heavy feeders? Do they like a lot of fertilizer?
They do. Yeah, they do. We treat all the fields with our compost each season. There's a variety of different cover crops that we will grow throughout the spring. And then we will also fertilize with, we use fish emulsion and some more general ones.
Okay, so they like heat. So do you wait to plant them out till you're really sure it's going to be nice and warm for them?
Yes. What's tricky is that flea beetles really like them.
That's what the other thing I was going to say is, how do you prevent the flea beetles? Yeah. That's what seems to destroy most of the crops that I see.
Yes. What I like to be able to do is to have a good aged plant going into the field. If the little guy, the little plant's old enough and mature enough, when the flea beetles emerge, they will generally get through it okay.
So don't be alarmed if the leaves get pocked from the flea beetle, as long as the plant is nice and sturdy and healthy.
Yes, yes. So typically 8 to 10 weeks is the age that you would want them to go into the field from the greenhouse. However, I'd say the ones that we plant here tend to be more like 15 weeks along. So they're quite a bit older.
Candace is right. Eggplant is a misunderstood vegetable. I'm of the opinion that most people who avoid eggplant just haven't had it prepared correctly. We're going to see if we can change that. First of all, that soggy, oily eggplant Parmesan Candace mentioned, Chef Daniel Orr of Farm Bloomington Restaurant, he has a fix for that. He calls it eggplant Parmesan. It's a total revamping of a tired recipe with distinct textures and remarkable flavors. But before we get to that, we have two other ideas for you. A creamy soup with a kick and a rich and fancy roll-up. We're going to start with the soup. Let's head into the kitchens of Farm Bloomington with Chef Daniel Orr.
To get started, take your full eggplant, cut its little cap off, okay, and then cut it in half, north to south, so long ways, and then lay it cut side up, and we're just going to score it with the knife, kind of going deeper in the center, and then going to crosshatch that. And what this does is it allows it to cook evenly and quickly. So we're going to do that to both sides. For this recipe, you need 3 or 4 large eggplants, or about 6 of the long, narrow ones. So we've crosshatched those. Then we're going to season them with some salt and pepper, and then we're going to put it on a baking sheet that's been greased with a little bit of olive oil, turn it to the cut side down, and we're going to add about 1.5 to 2 cups of water to that tray. Then when we roast them off, they're going to kind of steam and soften at the same time.
He popped the halved and scored eggplants into a 350-degree oven for about 25 minutes. But be sure to check your eggplant. Make sure they're nice and soft all the way through. Different sizes require longer or shorter cooking times.
So now you get this real velvety textured eggplant. I throw that in our soup pot. Continue that with the other eggplants. It skips that really, really easy. And this is the same technique you'd do if you were making a baba ganoush, okay, which is a Middle Eastern eggplant spread. Now in the restaurant, we're used to making huge quantities of soup, but you know, making it 20 gallons at a time. So this is a little different for me not to make a big batch. Now we got all that in our soup pot. Now we're just going to add our remaining ingredients. I've got 10 cloves of garlic that have been peeled, and I've got some ginger root, about 2 tablespoons, that I'm going to dice. Okay, that goes in the pot. Put 1 jalapeno in there.
Okay. So I'm noticing that wasn't a real fine dice.
No. That wasn't a fine dice because we're going to be pureeing this. So, and the garlic I left whole because we're going to puree it. So no use, you know, going through that extra step. You know, cooking should be actually pretty simple. And then we're going to do 1 can of the coconut milk, 1 tablespoon of curry paste. I'm using kind of a Korean red chili paste, but then I'm also going to use some regular Madras curry powder. Okay, about 1 tablespoon of each. Add some salt and pepper, 1/4 cup of lemon juice. So we're starting to build those different balance of flavor. You got some sweet, you got some heat, you got some sour. Coconut gives it that luxurious flavor. And then I'm going to add 3 cups of water and 1/2 cup of olive oil and bring that all to a boil.
You'll want this to simmer on the stove for at least 15 or 20 minutes. But like with most soups, the flavors will develop and deepen the longer it cooks. While you're waiting, you can go to our website to find these eggplant recipes and even more. I am not the first to do an Earth Eats eggplant extravaganza. Visit eartheats.org and search for eggplant. You'll see what I'm talking about. Let's get back to that soup.
So we've simmered the eggplant, and you can see it's got a really nice creamy texture. I would say simmer it for about 15, 20 minutes. Really let those jalapenos that we added to it cook. The garlic should be tender. I also put in about 2 tablespoons of brown sugar to give it a little extra sweet.
Next, we head over to the blender. You could also use a food processor or one of those stick blenders and work directly in the soup pot.
Anytime you're blending a hot liquid in a blender, always go on the very, very lowest speed. So then you just slowly bring it up to speed. Okay, pop that top off and give it a taste. Remember, always taste as you go. Kind of the sourness and the spiciness of the curry. Put that in our soup bowl. Gonna garnish it with a little basil oil, which you can go on the website and get the recipe. Super easy. So we're gonna finish it with the basil oil, cilantro, and a few toasted almonds to give it a crunch. And there we go. That is our curried eggplant soup with toasted almonds, basil oil, and cilantro.
I had to taste it too.
That is a great balance of flavors. You can really taste everything. Like you can taste the ginger, can taste the
lemon juice and the curry, and
the heat is there. Yeah, it's wonderful.
You don't need to take my word for it. Try it out for yourself. The recipe lives at eartheats.org. Production support comes from Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent with Personal Financial Services, assisting businesses and individuals with tax preparation and planning for over 15 years. More at personalfinancialservices.net. The Clean Bedroom, offering organic mattresses, adjustable beds, and pillows, helping mindful customers create a sustainable and organic clean bedroom step by step. New York City, Boston, and now Indianapolis. More at thecleanbedroom.com. And Charles Schwab & Company Incorporated, moving its local branch to 1155 College Mall Road in August. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, and team offer personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. Our next eggplant recipe sounds complicated, but it's really quite simple and straightforward. Chef Daniel Orr will walk us through the steps.
This one is a grilled eggplant roulade. Okay, and it's very, very healthy, whereas, you know, the eggplant parmesan is deep fried and, you know, has all that cheese and everything on it. This is a much lighter, healthier, almost like salad-like main course, perfect vegetarian main course. So we have our grilled eggplant, and when you grill eggplant, you want to brush it with olive oil on both sides, season it with salt and pepper, and then give it a good mark on the grill. But one of the things a lot of people do is they undercook their eggplant, and it's kind of cardboardy and dry. So you really want to make sure that the eggplant gets cooked all the way. So if you can't get it cooked all the way in the grill, just throw it in the oven for a little bit. Right. We've got two of those eggplant pieces. We're going to put some asparagus down. And then what we have to make it really, really luxurious is some brie cheese. So I've got about 4 or 5 pieces of asparagus on each one, crosswise. So it's almost like we're going to, you know, wrap them up in a quilt. Their little heads sticking out of the top and their little feet sticking out of the bottom. We've got the brie cheese on there. Now we're putting some sliced raw tomato. Basil is always great, plays very well with both tomato and eggplant. So we'll put some fresh basil leaves, put a little salt and pepper, and then we're just going to roll those up. And then I have a baking dish that I have rubbed with olive oil, and we're going to put those right down on top of that. And then we're just going to bake these off until the cheese is melted in the middle. So we don't really, it's already, the eggplant's already cooked. We just want to warm the other vegetables, melt the cheese. So in a hot oven, I would say about 8 to 10 minutes.
If you're having trouble picturing how these are assembled, we've got photos along with our recipes at eartheats.org.
All right, so they're nice and warm. They don't need to be super piping hot. You just want to melt that cheese. For most people, I think even one of those might be enough for a main course. We're going to put a little red pepper coulis, which is our red pepper sauce, some fresh Parmesan, and a little bit of basil oil around the outside. And those are our grilled eggplant roll mops with brie and spring vegetables.
That eggplant just melts in your mouth.
Doesn't it? Yeah, that's the whole thing. People don't usually cook it enough when they grill it, and it's kind of chewy.
Yep.
So you need to continue cooking it. What I usually do is I take it off the grill, and then I stack them, and then bake them in the oven slowly so they steam and get moist.
That's a really great technique.
Find all the techniques and tricks for making the perfect eggplant on our website, eartheats.org. Our final recipe today is a fresh twist on an eggplant classic. We're back in the kitchen with Chef Daniel Orr at Farm Bloomington Restaurant.
We are going to do one of my favorite eggplant recipes, typically known as eggplant parmesan, but we call it eggplant farmesan. And this is one of those dishes that always disappoints me when I have it somewhere else. You know, if you go to gourmet market and they have it prepared, I take it home and bake it in the oven, and it's not what I want it to be. It is a kind of a difficult recipe because it does take a lot of steps, but I'm going to show you how to do it. First of all, we're going to start with a standard breading procedure, SBP in the trade. This is something that every cook needs to know. First dish, you have your seasoned flour. Second dish, you have your egg wash. And the third dish, you have your breading coating. That could be panko, which we're using today. Could be cornmeal if you're going to make some fried green tomatoes. First dish is that seasoned flour. Seasoned flour means at a minimum, you've got salt and pepper in there. And when you're running this through your fingers, it should feel sandy. If it doesn't feel sandy, you don't have enough salt in it. It'll take more than you think. So that is kind of like your wallpaper paste that's going to keep the egg and the breadcrumbs on. So I dip both sides and get them well shaken off. If your coating of flour is too thick, then the egg won't adhere. Okay, your hands are still fairly clean. All right, so you're going to keep a wet hand and a dry hand. So your wet hand goes into the egg, dry hand puts the crumbs on.
That is the secret that I have always been missing.
And that makes a big difference. That will give you a nice light crisp so you can see through the coating and still see the eggplant, which is important. A lot of times when I get an eggplant out at some other place, it's got a real thick coating and it's almost all coating, no eggplants. And we're going to do a stacked style eggplant. So there'll be individual portions that are stacked and they look really, really nice that way. It's not the typical eggplant parmesan casserole that most people make and you cut out squares. This will be kind of its own little thing. We're going to take these back to the fryer. Most people don't have a fryer at home. Another great way to do this is to drizzle these with olive oil and then put them in a real hot oven and bake them. And they'll be a little bit less fatty, a little bit more, a little healthier for you. Put these in the fryer. Get them sizzling. Okay, and that's the nice thing about having a big fryer is you can get all these done real quick, whereas at home you'd have to do them in batches and it takes a lot longer. And you're looking for these to be GBC, golden brown and crunchy. As with most things, if you want them crunchy, you want to cook them until they stop bubbling intensely. The bubbles are coming from the moisture in whatever you're frying. And so the more bubbles there are, the more liquid there still is in the product. They're starting to look pretty good. If you don't leave them in there long enough, they'll tend to be a little bit chewier. You know, eggplant does need to be cooked to be tender. So what I like these to be is like little pillows of eggplant that should just be, you know, just kind of melt in your mouth. To me, that looks like a little bit of heaven. We're here, we're going to season it. And you always want to season your stuff when it's hot out of the fryer. If you try to season them after they're cold, it's not going to stick. Yeah, and this is our freshly grated parmesan.
Once all the slices are fried and seasoned, Chef Orr proceeds to build his individual stacks. He starts with a baking pan coated in olive oil. He arranges 4 slices of eggplant in the pan. Next, he tops each one with a dollop of tomato sauce and a slice of fresh tomato. He tops that with another layer of eggplant, then a dollop of pesto. He tops that with a circle of fresh mozzarella cheese and then the top slice of fried eggplant. He thins out some tomato sauce with some water to a sort of a tomato juice consistency, and he pours that into the baking dish around the stacks. and then he pops it all into a 350-degree oven for about 10 to 15 minutes, just until the mozzarella is nice and melted. Then he pulls it out of the oven.
Ooh la la. That is a much nicer presentation than that casserole swimming in oil.
Don't you think so? All right, so put one of these on each plate. You see that sauce is thickened up. Okay, we're gonna garnish it with a little of our famous basil oil. I've got some wild arugula out of my garden. And then right before it goes out, I like to lift up the top and put some fresh basil. So you really get that green, fresh basil flavor inside. And that is our eggplant parmesan.
Yeah, that is gorgeous. Love that white mozzarella spilling out. So the textures of that, it's so great. Everything, you know, you retain the crispiness.
Right. Yeah, it's completely different. That's why I'm always disappointed when I go somewhere else and get it, because it really is one of my favorite things.
Well, it's really done nicely with the fresh mozzarella, too. It doesn't have that, I don't know, melty,
yeah,
everything kind of swimming together. It's just
all the little individual flavors come out. And as you eat the tower, you get different flavors on different levels, you know, so it's not just, you know, like sometimes a casserole tastes the same throughout the whole eating, where this, every little bite tastes a little different. And you dip some in the basil oil, some in the red pepper or the tomato sauce, you know, so I think it's a really fun way to have it.
My favorite thing is that you keep the crunch. You know, it's not getting all soggy in there. It's just, yeah, that's incredible.
Go to our website right now and gaze upon this lovely presentation. Then you've got to gather up the ingredients and try making this recipe yourself. I promise it's like no eggplant parmesan you've had before. You're going to love it. The recipe is waiting for you at eartheats.org. Production support comes from Need More Coffee Roasters, a woman-owned coffee bar and roastery dedicated to roasting organic, direct trade, and fair trade coffee from small-scale farmers around the world. Offering signature drinks, teas, and little eats. Located on Pete Ellis Drive, needmoreroasters.com. Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent with Personal Financial Services, assisting businesses and individuals with tax preparation and planning for over 15 years. More at personalfinancialservices.net. And The Clean Bedroom, offering organic mattresses, adjustable beds, and pillows, helping mindful customers create a sustainable and organic clean bedroom, step by step. New York City, Boston, and now Indianapolis. More at thecleanbedroom.com. Earth Eats is put together by a wonderful team of people, including Aabon Binder, Chad Bouchard, Alex Chambers, Mark Chilla, Taylor Killow, Daniel Orr, all the folks at Farm Bloomington Restaurant, the IU Food Institute, and Harvest Public Media. Special thanks this week to Candace Minster. Earth Eats theme music is composed by Aaron Toby and performed by Aaron and Matt Toby. Our executive producer is John Bailey. I'm Kate Young, and that's our show. Thanks for listening. We'll be back here next week.